Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Episode des Fraport Skyliners Podcast. Mein Name ist Jörg Behren und ich habe den Eindruck, dass ich nicht der Einzige bin, der jetzt immer noch so ein bisschen unter dem Eindruck der großartigen Trikotzeremonie für Tess Robertson steht. Das gilt genauso für die Mannschaft, doch die Jungs mussten kurz darauf schon in den Flieger steigen, um Gen Malle abzuheben, denn dort steht das traditionelle Trainingslager an, was die Jungs nochmal richtig, richtig gut zusammenschweißen soll und richtig, richtig in Shape bringen soll, um dann den Rest der Hauptrunde zu bestreiten. Denn am nächsten Wochenende geht's immerhin direkt schon nach Hagen. Spitzenspiel in der Pro A und damit steht auch der zweite Teil des Cookie Game an. Das Hinspiel leider 81-91 verloren, kurz vor Weihnachten in der Süwag Energie Arena. Denn auch da haben wir Lebensmittel gesammelt für die Frankfurter Tafel. Und jetzt, kurz vor Ostern, machen wir das Gleiche dementsprechend an der Volme. Also alle Fans, ganz egal ob Hagener, Frankfurter, ey, oder auch neutrale Zuschauer, die soll es geben, seid herzlich eingeladen, bringt abgepackte und original verpackte Konserven etc. pp. Mit an die Halle, gebt es dort für die Tafel ab, ey, und lasst uns Basketball nutzen, um etwas Gutes zu tun. Und gerade mit Blick auf dieses Spiel in Hagen haben wir gedacht, ey, lasst uns doch mal einen der Spieler zu Wort kommen. Und da haben wir uns Booker Copeland rausgepickt, der eine ganz besondere Verbindung tatsächlich mit einem der Phoenix-Spieler hat. Aber das lösen wir dann gleich während der Episode auf. Denn erstmal wollte ich von ihm wissen, ey, das ist jetzt dein drittes Jahr in Europa, dein drittes Jahr in Deutschland. Deine Profikarriere hat angefangen in Düsseldorf. Aber wie war das damals? Ey, straight out of college, frisch von der Uni und dann in eine Stadt, deren Namen nicht genannt werden darf.
It was like a lot of new things on your own. You know, you're really by yourself and you're really just not only learning new things on basketball, you're learning how to live and how to operate, you know, learning the new language. It's really a huge culture shock. I don't think people realize how much imports coming overseas are really taking on all at one time. You look at a lot of just basketball stuff, but there's really a lot more to it. So I think that was the biggest adjustment, just adjusting to everything all at once.
But shouldn't college prepare one for, you know, life after all the academic stuff? So in what way did college prepare you? What came afterwards?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, college is definitely about like moving on from family life and living on your own. And that was definitely part of it. But I think it's a completely different thing in one country versus another. You know, college was great for many, many things. But moving overseas, I think that it was still a major culture shock for sure, for me anyway, personally. Because in college, you build friends, you're around the same people a lot for a long time, and you have a lot of support. You know, you speak the same language. It kind of makes it more, it's still comfortable.
That helps. That helps.
And so I think there's still a lot of things that move out of your comfort zone to another level.
But when you say there's a lot of stuff you can take away from college, and you didn't mention any specifics, so what's the major takeaway from your perspective, you know, when it comes to, I don't know, whether it's academical or partying or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, university is a lot of fun. Academics definitely are a step up, so you're studying a lot more. It's a lot more responsibility about how you're gonna prepare for exams, for homework, whatever. It's not so much of babysitting, so you gotta really just take it on the chin, and you know, what you put in is what you get out. So I think a lot of it's more just on your own responsibility, and that definitely prepares you for the real world. So yeah, I mean, you gotta balance both how much studying, how much partying you do, how much fun you have, and try and really make the most of the whole experience, because it's short. It goes by quick.
I mean, let's not talk too much about the entire pandemic stuff, but
yeah.
It was 5 years for you. So it was prolonged, at least a little. a little bit of something.
Well, it actually cut mine short. I didn't I didn't even get a full extra year. I was done. So, right. I mean, our season ended right before we had lost in the playoffs. So we were already out and we were already done. Whether that's good or bad, you know, however you want to look at it, a lot of guys had their season cut short, and those seniors, 2020 seniors, they didn't get that COVID year. They didn't get that extra little boost. So that changed a lot. Kind of was tough.
Never really thought about it. That's why I want to know from you now, how worried were you back in the days? I mean, we're talking about the summer of 2021. The pandemic was all over the place.
Yep.
I mean, we're talking about somebody who just finished college, who was about to, you know, let him loose, being thrown out to the world, try to find a job in the midst of the pandemic.
Yeah.
So how much, I don't know really how to describe it, but how much unease was involved during that summer?
There was a lot of unease. I mean, especially as an athlete, you know, a D3 athlete at that, I didn't know if I was even going to have opportunities to go overseas. So you got to start thinking about school. You got to start thinking about, you know, like grad school, a job, online, you know, jobs, remote jobs, whatever it may be. But there was a lot of unease, and I was just really thankful to have an agent that kind of ended up taking a chance with me. Even just finding an agent wasn't even a guarantee. And then also having an opportunity where some teams were interested in having me play still was just really fortunate, because I still had PT school, I had grad school on my mind, you know, if basketball doesn't work out, trying to apply for that, applications, COVID changed a lot of application situations, how many students they're letting in and stuff. So, and then, you know, just looking for maybe real jobs too. So there's a lot on your plate all at the same time, and it definitely made things interesting. Graduating.
Take me through that process of finding or making your way to Düsseldorf finally. Every time I speak to rookies or even 5, 6, 7 year veterans that have been all over the place in Europe, it's so damn hard to figure Europe out as a basketball landscape.
Yeah.
So what did you do to somehow figure out, hey, what place might be for me as a starting point and what place might not be the best?
Well, honestly, I had to just kind of take with whatever opportunities I was given, and there wasn't a lot of teams that were interested in like signing me, so I really just kind of trusted my agent and trusted like some former players that had played overseas. And Germany was a really well-respected place to play basketball, so I was really thankful to have an opportunity, and I knew that if I could just get my foot in the door, I could prove and prove that I can play overseas and play professionally and work my way up the ladder. So I was just thankful even to have a spot at Pro B as a first-year spot in Germany and German basketball. So, you know, I had a few other opportunities maybe, but it seemed like the clear decision for me and the right decision for sure.
And a good friend of ours told me that it took you some time to get adjusted to league play.
Und damit sind wir bei Lennart Bohner. Lennart trägt die 51, ist dieses Jahr bei Phoenix Hagen unter Vertrag und hat die vergangenen beiden Jahre mit Booker zusammen in Düsseldorf gespielt. Beide sind ein Stück weit aus ihrer Komfortzone raus. Lennart, wie gesagt, nach Hagen, Booker entsprechend zu uns nach Frankfurt. Und hey, vor diesem Matchup Skyliners gegen Phoenix mussten wir logischerweise bei ihm nachfragen, was denn seine Erinnerung und sein erster Eindruck von Booker war.
Ich weiß noch, dass ich ein bisschen überrascht war, dass der Verein nicht mit einem Ami-Point Guard gegangen ist, weil das in der Pro B ja meistens so üblich ist, dass man, wenn man einen Ami verpflichtet, den meistens auf die Point Guard-Position packt. Ich aber in seinen Highlight-Tape schon gesehen habe, dass er absolute Scorer-Mentality hat und ich mir da eigentlich dann so im Großen und Ganzen gar keine Sorgen gemacht habe, dass er Impact haben wird. Was natürlich auffällig war, ist, dass er vom Division 3 gekommen ist und ja, man allein irgendwie von dem, was man bis dahin so gesehen hat, schon wusste, okay, das ist nicht die höchste Spielklasse, wenn man so will. Nee, aber die erste Trainingseinheit, da haben wir direkt zusammengeworfen und da hat man schon gesehen, dass er relativ zielsicher den Ball da in den Korb werfen kann. Und in den Trainingseinheiten hat man das dann wirklich auch noch mal mehr gesehen. Absolutes Scorer-Gehen, anfanglich auch wirklich so diese College-Mentality. Ich spiele eins gegen eins und wenn ich an meinem ersten Gegenspieler vorbei bin, dann habe ich das grüne Licht, wilde Korbleger zu machen. Und da spielt man ja in Europa ein bisschen anders. Das haben wir tatsächlich dann auch gemerkt, als wir die ersten, boah, 5 von 6 Spiele verloren haben. Er immer gute Statistiken hatte, es aber noch nicht so ganz verstanden hatte, uns auch zu involvieren. Also viele, viele verrückte One-on-Ones und ja, am Ende wilde Statlines mit, keine Ahnung, 26 Punkten und dann irgendwie 4, 5 Assists, aber halt eben nicht der Teamerfolg. Und das war dann schon crazy, als er das dann begriffen hat und wir uns dann ja ein Stück weit gegenseitig angenähert haben und auch angepasst haben vom Spielstil. Als dann einmal ja so der Knoten geplatzt ist, dann haben wir, glaube ich, 6, 7, 8 Spiele in Folge gewonnen. Und davon habe ich natürlich auch massiv profitiert, weil unsere Connection ja nicht seit Day One ziemlich gut war, aber wir ja mit einem Miku, mit einem Frankie Aunitz, mit einem Mark Gebhardt, also da waren viele Leute, die von, ja, von seiner Energie profitiert haben, weil er einfach absolute Threat war und alle wussten, dass er scoren kann, aber als er dann auch gelernt hat, den Hockey Pass zu spielen, also nicht immer auf Assist zu gehen, dann waren wir in der Pro B schon eine heftige Mannschaft, ohne dass wir vielleicht namentlich auf dem Papier irgendwie so brutal herausgestochen haben. Aber das ist ja dann auch im Aufstieg geendet. Also hat sich dann ja klasse durchgesetzt und da sind wir, glaube ich, nicht zuletzt auch wegen ihm am Ende aufgestiegen.
When did you somewhat change or adjust as a player during that very first year?
It was definitely a process. I think honestly, throughout my entire life playing basketball, I've never really been like a go-to scorer, a main shooter, a volume shooter. I wasn't even like my first 2 years in college. I was a role player. I was just a hard worker, make cuts, catch and shoot. And honestly, the last 2 years of college is when I really started to develop like some one-on-one skills even. And I had a coach that had a lot of faith in me, a lot of confidence in me. So it was kind of a new experience even just being a player like that. So obviously transitioning to overseas, a lot of guys are saying they bring you in to score, they bring you in to produce, whether it's scoring or passing or whatever. So I kind of had that mindset going in. And then the process of learning like different styles of defense, different styles of offense, and just the way Europeans play the basketball was, of course, it was a learning curve. And I think that I had a really great group of guys around me that were patient with me, that helped me kind of see things quicker. And I think that, you know, coming from D3, I had that experience at least to know that I can learn and I can adjust. And I think that I did a good job of overall adjusting and learning and finding ways to involve teammates more and knowing when to attack and when to produce and when to involve more guys. And I think that having the confidence from my coach to learn was a big, big thing for me slowly.
Would you say that's maybe the major takeaway from that season? That you're able to, you know, as you said, learn new stuff,
yeah,
adjust the game, or at least, you know, maybe not to focus just solely on that aspect of the game, but have all or some other aspects as well. And being able to, hey, I can be a facilitator, I can be a rebounder, I can be whatever.
Yeah.
Something like
that. That's for sure. I think that that's a huge point of emphasis for that season for sure, and I think that that really helped change the way that we were as a team too, because you know, we made a crazy run at the end there, and so having the confidence to make the decisions from my coach, knowing that, hey, like, as long as you produce and involve your other teammates and attack the defense in the right way, if you end up deciding that a shot is the better situation or the pass or whatever, he had full confidence in me doing that. So it took some time to get there, but overall, I think it was a big part of how we ended up winning down the stretch.
Ended up winning down the stretch ist eine sehr schöne Formulierung für das, was am Ende in einem Aufstieg resultiert ist. Und da haben wir uns gedacht, da müssen wir nochmal bei jemandem nachfragen, der ganz nah dran war bei der Geschichte, und haben unsere Finger ausgestreckt in Richtung Ex-Giants-Coach Florian Flapp, der uns wiederum seine Sicht der Dinge und vor allem auch seine Sicht auf Booker geschildert hat.
Sehr, sehr viele schöne Erinnerungen habe ich an die Zeit mit Booker in Düsseldorf. Allem voran steht natürlich der gemeinsame Aufstieg von der Pro B in die Pro A. Es war ein unglaublich interessantes und natürlich auch sportlich erfolgreiches Jahr, was dementsprechend auch sehr, sehr viel Spaß gemacht hat. Ich denke, wenn man eine Szene herausnehmen muss, dann ist es natürlich auch sein Wurf im dritten Spiel gegen Koblenz im Viertelfinale, den er kurz vor Ende mehr oder weniger mit Ablauf der Uhr trifft.
Was folgte, war eine Halbfinalserie gegen Ulm, die Düsseldorf 2-1 gewann, und anschließend eine Finalserie gegen Dresden, die knapp verloren ging, aber nichtsdestotrotz zur Folge hatte, dass die Giants das sportliche Anwartschaftsrecht auf die Pro A hatten. Aber dass es alles überhaupt so gekommen ist, das war von Anfang an nicht so ganz absehbar. Do you still remember having a rookie slump in year one?
I mean,
did you have that? Did you have that typical?
I go through.
I don't know, maybe 2-3-4 week stretch where, I don't know, whether it's life in general or basketball or whether
absolutely.
It shuts down falls, stuff like this.
Absolutely. Like there's some down moments for me my first year for sure. Like I think that culture shock hits hard right away, but it doesn't set in right away. And there were some moments where you're sitting in your room by yourself alone, and you know, if you're not playing well, you go home and you have to think about it for 24 hours until the next practice, and you're by yourself, you can't call, you can't be around people to hang out with like you usually would in college, you can't distract yourself, like, so there are some really down moments for sure. I mean, I don't know how much it's talked about, but like, it's a struggle as an import overseas, how lonely you feel, and I think that really affects your mental health. And when you combine that with the shock of basketball as well, it can really affect guys a lot. It's not for everyone, and I knew that guys overseas before had told me this, like, it's really a grind, it's really like a challenge mentally, it'll really push you to your limits. You know, you hear that and you say, yeah, of course, but you don't know what it's like until you actually do it yourself. And so of course it affects your play, it affects how you see things, how you see life. It was a crazy experience, but I'm still here doing it, and I came out on the other side, and I'm happy for it, for sure.
I think that's the best side, the best sign, that you're still here and still doing, you know, what you started back then. I got so many follow-up questions now.
Go ahead, shoot.
Holy. In what way, when you say before starting year one, you reached out to a couple people, was there any way, anybody who somehow prepared you for what's coming, and especially when, let's stick to that that rookie slump, did somebody tell you, hey, I know it's coming, you should know it's gonna come somewhere down that road, it might be in as early as November, it might be somewhere in March, whatever, but it's coming, you're gonna have that slump, you better be prepared for it. Was there somebody, or is there some way you could prepare yourself for that slump?
I mean, it's like the line where it's, what is it, Mike Tyson? Everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face.
Right.
Like, of course, everyone can go into a situation and say, you know, this is going to be terrible. This is going to be brutal. You know, you're going to hit this slump. And everyone says, yeah, of course, you know. And you can say, hey, listen, no, seriously, like, you're going to get punched in the face. But it doesn't matter until you actually get hit and you got to feel that pain and that the struggle. Like, so honestly, to answer your question, I'd say no. Like, there's no way to prepare for it. I mean, obviously, I had guys that I was working out with that had played overseas that had told me, you know, it's a struggle, it's a grind. You got to love it. You got to really love basketball. And I had my coach at Augsburg that was, you know, telling me he had connections overseas since he was recruiting me to go there. And that was part of my dream too. So he was a big help. He was a big connection. He knew guys that had played overseas and knew agents and stuff. So that helped for sure. But like I said, I don't think anybody can prepare you for that. But that's a good thing too. Like, it's you got to go.
At least you know it's coming. And you know there's so many people, so many guys before you that made it out alive. So is there anything or any piece of advice that you could give to rookies nowadays where you'd say, hey, maybe that helps coming out alive on the other end? Or has there been, I mean, for instance, when we look at our team now here in Frankfurt, we got 3 rookies on our roster. Have you been able to provide some kind of help to them when they hit their rookie slump this year?
I mean, I think that the best way, I mean, it depends on, you know, for me it was tough because I was one of the few Americans. So I think coming in this year, knowing that we had a few other rookies and a few other Americans, I've really been trying to invite them, include them, say, hey, you know, the more team bonding we can do, the closer you can get with the guys that you're going through it together, the better, because you have that shared experience. You're there every day at practice. You know what, today practice was shit, you know, like you can bond through that. And you know the struggle of missing family and stuff. So I think that's the biggest thing for me, honestly, is just spending as much time as you can with teammates, even though you spend all day with them, like, they're your people, they understand where you're coming from, the culture shock, especially other rookies. So I've been really trying to, you know, include them as much as possible. We had like a team Thanksgiving, team Christmas stuff, just like even going to the Christmas markets, whatever it is, like trying to do things together so they don't feel so lonely on holidays and whatever that is. But I think that you got to also just know going in that you got to really love the game. And I think that's the biggest advice I give too, is just, you know, remember the passion you have for the sport, and that'll really carry through your season.
Those are the people that you need to go through thick and thin with.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, there's no other way around, because you're going to be, I mean, yeah, unless somebody, I don't know, lets his contract being terminated or whatever, but
yeah.
Yeah, you signed up for the test. You know you're going to be here from August to hopefully June.
Yeah.
So, hey, let's make the fucking best out of this time that's given to us.
Yeah.
And you know, hey, we're going to have some, I don't know, we're going to win 9 in a row as we did at the beginning of the season.
Absolutely.
We know we're going to maybe lose 2 or 3 down the road eventually. But, hey, the only people that really can help us is the 10, 12 guys on that roster, and because nobody else other than these 10, 12 guys can do the job for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I believe once you realize this, it helps, you know, given to some regard criticism when it's meant in a positive way, when it's meant to help elevate the entire group, and it makes it easier to take criticism, because I know it's coming from a place where somebody tries to make me better and tries to make us as a group better.
Yeah, absolutely.
But coming back to those Düsseldorf days again for year 2, which is my little translation to the upcoming Hagen game, where we meet Leonard Borna, the guy that you spent 2 years playing in Düsseldorf with, and he moved on to Hagen last summer, and you moved on to Frankfurt. Take me through your point of view on that friendship, camaraderie that you guys have, because you as a D3 guy came in to Düsseldorf in Pro B. He is he's the blueprint of a late bloomer, if you will, because he started his pro career super late in his late 20s, made a super rough decision to, hey, quit my job, go to being a full-time pro, make that move, which is super bold, I guess, which speaks volumes to both of your guys' mentality to make that respective moves. And now, as I said, after those 2 years in Düsseldorf together, each and every one, hey, I'm going to go this way, you're going to go that way. How much are you guys still in touch, and how much did you guys talk, especially last summer, when, you know, you had to make a decision,
right.
Each and every one of you?
Yeah. Lenny and I are super close. We actually got a really great friendship. Over the last 2 years, obviously, it developed just being together every day, being in the gym together every day. And like I said, I think one of the things that he kind of was able to recognize is knowing that guys overseas come over and struggle with the culture shock, and especially rookies. You know, it's their first time doing a lot of these things, and I think Lenny was really great at incorporating me in conversation, locker room, asking me a lot of questions, including me in different things. I think Lenny's really great at finding the balance between having fun, doing things as a team, and also being serious, you know, getting the job done and winning. You know, he loves to win. He's very emotional, passionate guy when it comes to that, so that makes it fun. But yeah, we were able to get close enough that he even came and visited last summer. He came and visited me in my hometown in Minnesota. And I think that he got to, after 2 years of him showing me around kind of his area, German area, it was nice to kind of show him the U.S. from Minnesota perspective. And then, of course, you know, talks about the future were happening and stuff. And, you know, as much as we'd love to play together, I think that we both kind of knew that we were making the right decision, and we're excited about our journey ahead. And we're both, you know, making really good moves for our career. So, I mean, yeah, as much as we'd love to play together, I'm happy for him. He's having a lot of success over there. And so, you never know what the future holds.
Da hast du also auf der einen Seite einen Typen aus Minnesota, der 2 Jahre lang in Düsseldorf spielt und sich da wahnsinnig wohlfühlt. Und auf der anderen Seite einen Typen, der aus dem Rheinland kommt, auch immer basketballerisch da irgendwo unterwegs gewesen ist. Und beide entschließen sich im gleichen Sommer, den Club zu wechseln. Der eine, wie gesagt, dann ein Stück weiter nach Westfalen, der andere nach Hessen. Und ist das dann nicht auch ein Stück mutig, Leonard Bohner, raus aus der eigenen Komfortzone zu gehen?
Weiß ich gar nicht so. Ich glaube, dass er ja in Deutschland irgendwo ständig auch außerhalb der Comfort Zone ist, auch keinen ganz leichten Karriereweg bisher gehabt hat. Das heißt, ich glaube schon absolut anpassungsfähig. Und ja, in Hagen habe ich hier jetzt auch innerhalb von kürzester Zeit eine Situation vorgefunden, wo ich absolut happy bin. Also ich glaube, dass wir da beide sehr anpassungsfähig sind und sehr glücklich und unseren neuen Rollen und in unserem neuen Zuhause.
What's the score or what's the probability of you sneaking out of the hotel to meet with him on Saturday night, someplace downtown Hagen, have an alt beer or whatever, and
that's hilarious.
And talk about the good old times.
Zero. That's not happening for sure.
Because you're not leaving the hotel room, or he's not sneaking out his apartment.
Hey, that on my end, I can tell you that that's not happening for sure. You know, whether that happened before this year once already, that's a different conversation. But the night, but the night before the game, for sure not. That's he's not my friend anymore. Week of, you know, we're not buddies anymore. Even when they came to Frankfurt, I think we were in warmups. We made eye contact once, and I don't think I even gave him a smile. It was one of those.
Was it on purpose, here to, or are out, you that yeah, kind of guy, sure, who's, I mean, in his own shit, in his zone?
I mean, once the game gets going a little bit, I think I had a little fun with him, you know, a little conversation here and there, but I'm here to win, you know, for 40 minutes, even the warm-up before, like, we're trying to be locked in, and he wants to be just as competitive. I know how he is, so I think it's more fun for us to get, you know, serious with each other beforehand, and we don't need to be buddy buddies until after the game, you know.
Yeah. But are you really one of those guys who needs to be locked in or who needs to have that, I don't know, 60 minutes warm up to get or to lock in? Or can you just switch it on and off?
I like to think that I can switch it on and off. But, I mean, obviously I like to also be relaxed and have fun, too. I think there's a good balance. You know, if somebody on the other team starts talking or gets me really pissed off, I think it can elevate my game. For sure, I like to play a little bit angry to begin with. But usually I'm not the one to start it. It doesn't usually end well if I'm the one starting it, but...
When you're post 30, when you're 30 plus, then you're the initiator.
Right, exactly. Yeah, for sure.
Talking about Hagen, during the first leg, they hit us pretty hard. We had a good run in the second half, then they came back in the fourth and pulled away the 91-81 victory. But that Booker Copeland guy had a... let's say a patent Booker Copeland's deadline 17-3-3. But besides all those numbers, I mean, there was shortly before Christmas. What's still in your head? What's been the major takeaway from that game against, you know, a team that likes to play tough on defense? And maybe that's something that mm-hmm. both teams have in common, but. Mm-hmm. I feel the way you live your defense isn't the same.
Yeah.
You know where I'm going to?
Absolutely. I think that we came a little bit flat. I think there's been kind of a theme of some games this year where we played poorly, was just coming out flat. And I think that that's one thing that Hagen does really well, is they come out with a lot of energy, a lot of passion. And I think that that translates to defense a lot. I mean, when you come out fired up and you come out like really energetic, I think that translates a lot to the basketball court. And we've shown flashes of it. We've shown that we're capable of kind of getting excited like that. But I think that we really need to come out better. That game was definitely a little flat. So if we can come out with a little bit more passion, a little bit more energy, especially in an arena like that, we're going to need it. So that's definitely what I'm looking forward to this time, is coming out with a little bit more energy.
Yeah. That's true. Have you tried to pick his brain about how they built that kind of chemistry, that grittiness, or is that something that you guys don't talk about?
We've talked about a little bit. I mean, I think that's for sure like a staple of Hagen. I think the guys that they have too are, that's their personality and that's what they do well, and they kind of feed off of each other. And, you know, I think Lenny's one of those guys too, and he can really get guys going. He's a gamer, you know, he likes to come out and play hard and get the crowd going and be passionate. And I think that feeds off of each other. So that's a big bonus for those guys for sure. And I think that we need more of that. I think that we got a few guys that really feed into that as well. So we just need to come out and really start it up, whoever it is, whether it's hustle plays, diving on the floor, whatever it is, and getting our teammates going. I think that would really, really boost up our energy for sure.
I truly believe energy is not going to be the problem on Sunday for both squads, because I mean when you have a packed arena, a packed Ishland Halle with 3.145 people in attendance, I mean, that's one thing that Leonard told me when he after he made that decision to move from Düsseldorf to Hagen. He said, hey, come on, you're playing in an arena where every time you touch the ball, you get booed. If you turn your face towards the spectators, somebody's flipping their fingers in your face. That's the kind of atmosphere you have to love. I mean, there's no way you're not bringing your A game when playing in that atmosphere.
Yeah, it can be hectic. It can be brutal. I mean, even playing there, even at Düsseldorf, going there was crazy hectic, but I'm sure now it'll be
not hostile, not hostile, but hectic and energetic.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. You gotta love it. I love that for sure. I love playing in a gym like that.
Yeah. Coming to an end, I got one big question on my note sheet. But in this regard, we have to maybe turn back the clock a little. You're in year three now, so hopefully you'll have at least 15, 20 more seasons to play, depending on it, you know, how the body feels. But when we did a story with local TV just a couple of weeks ago, during my research, I got to notice that your wife is all over the record books of Augsburg University. When you look through those record books, it's her name, it's your name there as well, but she's always ranked a little higher, you know. So, hey, just saying. But the point I'm trying to make is she's a baller.
Absolutely.
Period. So my question is, what's in her bag that you would love to have in your repertoire as well?
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen her go through a mental slump shooting. I think that she's got the confidence and the mentality to, you know, put your head down and score and shoot and just keep going. She's phenomenal basketball player. Obviously, the record books are sometimes part of our conversations, and I usually lose those arguments. So,
You can't win this one. Yeah. I mean, it's on paper. You can't win this. Is this something she brings up when it comes to whoever has to wash the dishes or do the laundry or so?
No, she's not like that. We're a great team, and fortunately, I'm actually able to, you know, the mental side of things is something that you can still talk about and gain from her, like in her bag, I guess. And I'm so lucky to have her as my wife now, and I can pick her brain, and she can help me with different things, you know, going through slumps, going through struggles, and every day I get to come home to someone that knows basketball, that knows what it's like, that was really, like, really good too. And so she's in the gym with me a lot, helping me mentally, and I think that's the biggest thing that you can possibly gain is just the mental side of things. Having her there has been incredible this year. So that's changed the way I look at basketball for sure. I mean, 100%.
Wir stellen also einmal wieder fest, es ist nicht so einfach, einen Spieler nur auf sich als Individuum zu reduzieren. Es gibt immer so viele Ansatzpunkte, so viele Leute, die Einfluss auf eine Karriere haben können. Ja, und natürlich, das ist entweder der Partner, die Partnerin oder auch ganz entscheidend mit Coaches entsprechend. Und genau deswegen mussten wir einfach auch diesbezüglich nochmal bei Coach Florian Flapp nachfragen, was bei ihm aus diesen zwei gemeinsamen Jahren bei den Giants hängen geblieben ist und eventuell was noch kommen kann.
Ja, persönlich habe ich natürlich extremst gute Erinnerungen an Booker, der in der Halle ein harter Arbeiter ist, der immer besser werden will, der competen will und damit auch die Menschen um sich herum ansteckt und ein ganz, ganz großer Schlüssel auch in dem Pro-A-Jahr zu unserem erfolgreichen Klassenerhalt war. Und freue mich natürlich jetzt umso mehr, dass er diese Qualitäten auch in Frankfurt Tag für Tag zeigt und jetzt in einem absoluten Top-Team seinen Weg gemacht hat und auch weitergeht und auch bis dato wieder eine sehr, sehr gute Saison spielt. In diesem Sinne wünsche ich ihm natürlich nur das Beste und hoffe, dass dieser steile Karriereweg auch weiter so geht.
Now that we're ahead of the Hagen game, the Bremerhaven game is right behind us, the jersey retirement ceremony for Tess Robertson as well. And one thing that Tess once stated that stuck with me was, he once said, "Hey, play the game that got you the job."
Right.
And that's, I believe, something that needs to be remembered. I mean, everybody wants to evolve as a player, as a person. You want to learn something new, but hey, stick. I mean, it comes down to, you could put it down to, hey, stick to your strengths to some degree.
Yeah, but do what you do for sure.
Right, and if you do some things good, why try something totally different or whatever?
Absolutely.
I mean, especially when we talk about basketball, somebody hired you over the summer
yeah.
because they like your outlook as a player.
Absolutely.
So they had an idea of, hey, how can we incorporate what he brings to the table into our system? So
absolutely.
Play the game that got you the job. So was there some specific line that your wife once said that stuck with you?
Oh man, she's got a lot of one-liners.
Oh, okay, okay.
I don't know. I guess one of the main things she's always telling me is just, you know, battle through it, get through it, stay confident, quick memory. That's one of the ones that she loves to say is be a goldfish. She stole that one from Ted Lasso. That's a good one that she loves to use this year. You know, quick memory, especially as a shooter, you got to live with missing some days and have the confidence to keep shooting, shoot when you're open and go out there and play with a lot of confidence and like kind of along the same lines, just be yourself and have confidence in yourself. And she's been helping me a lot with that this year.
A coach I once worked with once told me, Carsten Pohl, shout out to you, Carsten, once said, hey, if you miss like 10, 7, 8, 9, 10 in a row, whatever it may be, mathematically, when you look at your percentages, the percentage that you're going to make the next one are skyrocketing.
Yeah,
so
true.
If you're a shooter, if you miss, you know you're going to miss 5, 6, 7 at some point, whatever, whatever. But hey, if that's your strength, if you're a shooter, don't you dare stop shooting because that's your biggest strength. So mathematically, the chances are getting bigger and bigger that you're going to make the next one.
Yeah, that's super true.
Play the numbers game.
Yeah, you know, I was a big math guy, so the law of averages, you know, that helps a ton. You know, you just got to go out there and keep shooting.
So what are, when you say you're a math guy and a numbers guy, what's the stats that you're, are you a stats guy? Are you looking at the score sheet after the game?
And if so,
what are you looking for specifically? What's the first thing you're looking at?
I mean, I try not to. I think that the best shooting percentages for me personally was when I wasn't paying attention to stats, when you weren't caring about your shooting numbers and averages and stuff. So I think becoming a pro kind of changed that a little bit. You know, they like to look at stats and numbers a lot. So, but I think my favorite one to look at is the assist. Honestly, the first one I go to is looking at the assist, and I get mad when they get the assist wrong because I love, you know, showing that I can pass too. I think that's something that still a lot of people underappreciate, is my skill and ability to see the floor. And I just always love when my assist numbers get up there because I feel like it shows a little bit of proof, evidence that I can make, you know, some passes once in a while. So I would love to get a triple double this year. It's gonna be an insane task. The rebounds would be really tough, but I think that would be one of my favorite things to do this year is to get a triple double.
Okay.
Absolutely.